take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is your opportunity to get in and ask Peter Ward a question. Man, what a program. If you don't have questions, I just can't imagine why you wouldn't. Gotta love Fast Blast. Got a couple of those coming up for you. Actually, perhaps me and for Peter as well in a moment. Once again, Peter Ward, whose new book is Gorgon, G-O-R-G-O-N, and you should look for it, I suppose, on, well, I don't know, in bookstores and probably Amazon.com, right?
That's where it is.
Okay. You got to plug your book once in a while, Peter. Anyway, I've got a couple of fast blasts here before we go to the phone that I thought I'd share with you. They may or may not. One applies to you, it seemingly, and the other may apply to both of us. Ernest in Calgary. Says, die, you nasty American. I'm not sure who he's referring to there. And then Steve in Tucson, Arizona says, Mr. Ward, self-proclaimed old communist, that's in quotes there, doesn't offer many new solutions when asked. Oil sands, new scientific methods to extract the oil without harming the environment would solve our oil supply problem. What say you, Mr. SUV Fuzzy Math Ward?
Yeah, oil sand takes a lot of energy to get it out. That's the problem, is it became so expensive just because it was a huge energy sink to get the energy. That seems like counterproductive to me.
Hmm. All right, let's go to the phones and see what love awaits us there. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Peter Ward. Good morning.
Hello, am I on?
You are, yes.
This is Alan. I'm calling from Dallas.
Yes,
Alan. A-L-I-F.
Oh, Cliff, of course.
Yes, I was wondering if you guys know what the profits were for ExxonMobil in 2004. Have you heard about that?
I'd like to hear it.
$348 billion.
Wow.
I mean, now, with such outrageous profits, don't you guys smell a rat somewhere?
No, I smell a lot of profit.
Don't you think there's something wrong somewhere? I mean, is there really a shortage? Have they given us a reasonable explanation of why it's gone skyrocketing prices?
I don't feel like I've received a reasonable explanation. What about you, Peter?
Well, the profits are because they're selling so much oil to the Chinese. The Chinese have an insatiable oil demand, and that's why the prices are going up. There's more demand than there is supply, but the oil companies are having a great time, of course. They get to sell to whoever the highest bidder is.
Yeah. Well, they had to know that that was coming. I mean, whether it was the rest of the world, China and the rest of the developing world, they knew it was coming that way. They probably knew there was a certain amount of oil and a certain amount of demand, and they could see this coming. So why would they want to avert that, you know, and with all that profit? Right?
That's a good point. I mean, I'm just sitting here shaking my head going, well that's pretty self-evident.
Okay. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Peter Ward. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Erica from Colorado. And I was wondering, I heard a long time ago that on May 5th, the year 2005, all the poles on all the planets in our solar system are going to be aligned. And I was wondering if... I'm not sure if he's the right person to ask, but I was wondering if he's ever heard anything like that.
Oh, he's absolutely
like
the right person to ask.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, yes. Peter, it's true. What, the 5th of May? In what year, dear?
This year.
This year. That's right, 5th of May. Boy, that's going to be soon, too. all the planets are going to align, and what is your expectation, Peter, of what will happen at that moment?
My expectation is nothing will happen.
A big void.
The planets are so far apart that, I mean, the best you could expect is that you have some gravitational effect, but, gee, you know, everything, the distances are so unbelievably huge from planet to planet to planet that I doubt there's going to be much of an effect whatsoever. However, there will be an effect on astrologers the world over, and so I take that back.
Their blood pressure will rise exponentially.
Got it.
But that's about it, huh?
I don't think, you know, it'd be an interesting point, and what a cool coincidence. But in terms of, at least as a physical scientist, I don't quite see how it could do anything.
Yeah. Most scientists I've asked about that have said exactly that we should expect absolutely nothing. Okay, let's see. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Ward. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Most welcome. What is your first name?
This is Elena, and I'm just northeast of the city of Winnipeg in Manitoba, Canada.
Okay.
And I have a question. There's this beautiful big sand gravel quarry pit across the road from my farm yard here, where I went away for 16 years and came back, and the sand and gravel quarry pit, which was absolutely pristine. They had artesian spring wells, lots of birds and wildflowers and berries, and they filled this entire quarry pit with garbage. Tons and tons of garbage over the years. It's like approximately 3 city block lengths long and about a block length wide. They exhumed about a third of it and piled it up on the surface of the other garbage, and I'm wanting to know from your guest if it's a concern about this methane that, like, this garbage they dug up is the garbage that was buried 50, 60 years ago.
Now, this is actually a pretty interesting question. Peter, landfills all over the world filled with this garbage that no doubt is generating methane, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And actually, my university built its lower parking lot on top of a huge old garbage dump. Some years after that, when they started having the most god-awful smells, they realized they had to put pipes in. And then not only that did they have to put pipes in, but they had to ignite them to get rid of this methane. So,
my God,
whoever put that garbage in there should pipe out the methane, because it is a hazard. And I would expect
So they should pipe it into the atmosphere.
Yeah, well, it's the best way to concentrate it out, let the wind blow it away, because otherwise it concentrates.
Yeah, I could smell it. They started last July, and they were digging throughout the fall, and it's really quite awful. And like I say, I'm quite concerned, because there was no publicity on this. There was no, nothing was, it was kind of hushed up.
All right. Listen, thank you very much. It's an excellent point, and Peter, we do have landfills just everywhere. I mean, our garbage is prolific. Is it producing a lot of methane? Is it a sort of a worldwide problem? Could that one come back to bite us?
It is. It's a local problem. That amount of methane actually it seems huge to us because of all the garbage that we have locally in our neighborhood.
Right.
But if you compare that to the bottom of any ocean, where you've had millions of years of plankton falling down and rotting, kind of nature's garbage. The amount of methane in the oceans is so huge compared to what we humans have done. That's where the danger is. It's natural methane we have to worry about.
I actually kind of wanted to understand the mechanism, if it can be explained, by which the oceans do soak up all of this methane. Why does the ocean soak it up?
Well, the ocean is so full of life. All the plankton floats for a while, falls down into the sediment, and all this stuff gets buried in a lot of other sediments. Bacteria are down there. Uh-huh. The bacteria convert the organic material to methane, and it gets locked in. If it's cold enough, it just sits there. So you've got all this methane sitting in sediment, buried in the ocean. If you can stir it up somehow, and once again the thought is the global warming causes change in ocean chemistry and certainly ocean stratification, and bottom ocean stuff comes to the surface, and there's the problem.
What about the currents, Peter? I'm always looking for what would be the tripwire. Now, we know that if the currents changed and the warming waters stopped, that Europe would freeze.
Yeah.
But also, these currents might have other effects, right? In terms of, could they, for example, affect a methane that's now trapped?
Could be. And One of the really interesting things that people are looking at is the nature of currents in a globally warmed world. You know, we keep thinking about the superstorms and all the big manifestations that you see in the popular press, and while the transition time will certainly show that, once the world is thoroughly warmed, as it used to be, we could expect it to be virtually a windless and storm-free world. You know, the storms and the winds now are caused by one place being cold and one being hot, and the Earth redistributes the heat and the cold.
That's right.
If the whole place is warm, there's no redistribution taking place. So we really see the ancient, the Cretaceous and the Eocene, when we had a globally warm world, as a time there were no storms, there was no wind. It was just absolutely dead, calm, hot, and sticky.
Peter, what causes, well, they use the term a lot of times, runaway. Runaway.
Yep.
Okay, so tell me about runaway and how that gets started, and when it does, how fast does it move?
Well, the worst case of runaway we know of is Venus, and that's called a runaway greenhouse.
Yes.
Now, we're greenhouse is of course the warming effect produced by carbon dioxide, and Venus is 800 degrees at the surface because of its thick carbon dioxide atmosphere. Venus was like the Earth. We're pretty sure that 3 billion years ago, Venus had oceans, probably had life, and exactly an Earth-like world.
Now, that's something to think about.
Yeah, well, Art, you're going to have me on, I hope, in November, because I have a new book called Life as We Don't Know It, and this is going to be a textbook written for the public about aliens. And one of the chapters is about aliens we could expect to have on Venus. If they're there now, they're up in the clouds, and there's a group of astrobiologists who think that Venus, the runaway greenhouse on Venus, left them stranded up in the clouds. There's sulfuric acid in the clouds, and we have acid life in the Venus clouds. But we talk about runaway. What we're worried about here is runaway.
Wait, that was pretty interesting. You're saying there was once life on the surface of Venus.
Yep.
Runaway began.
Runaway began.
And what life there was somehow escaped the clouds? Are you serious?
Yeah, we're quite serious. Microbial life. And there's a number of pretty good indicators that it could still be there now, actually. One of my colleagues, David Grinspoon of Arizona, was the first to work out the fact that you could probably expect to have carbon life.
Huh.
It's going to love acid, but it's going to be high in the clouds because there's a lot of acid in the clouds of Venus, and that it has everything it needs. Nutrients are up there, energy's up there, and if there had been life that evolved on Venus' surface, it could certainly have been carried up into the clouds.
Hmm. Is there anything, once Venus ran away,
yep,
Peter, is there anything cosmologically that you could imagine that would start Venus out of this cycle?
No, once you run away forever.
Really?
And that will be the fate of the Earth, of course, is that our own fate is going to be a runaway sooner or later. And Don Brownlee and I, who wrote Rare Earth in another book, have posited that we have about 500 million years before we go runaway.
Whew. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Ward. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Art and Peter.
Where
how are you? This is Paul from Big Ditch, California. That's in Spanish, that's Arroyo Grande.
Okay.
I have three comments. First off, the cycle of global warming and global cooling is about 50,000 years. And since we were in the depths of the last ice age about 12,000 years ago, I would think that if the cycle is more or less sinusoidal, that we're probably right now about at the zero crossover, at which point you have the greatest rate of change of heating. So we still aren't at the highest point of the global heating that follows the global cooling.
Are you okay with this so far, Peter?
No, I'm going to disagree gently, but go ahead and let's finish up.
Okay, the second point is about 3 or 4 months ago, I read letters by two scientists to the industrial physicist where they said that in a geologic record, it shows that carbon dioxide lags global warming rather than leads global warming. And the third point I had to make is back in 1954, I was paying between 25 and 30 cents a gallon for my gasoline. At the time, I was making a dollar an hour. that same job pays at least $20 an hour now, so it's 20 times as much. And yet the price of gasoline is only 8 times as much, which means it's probably a much better bargain.
Do you work for Exxon?
And one final thing I might throw in.
Wait a minute. Hold on. That was a question.
Okay.
Do you work for Exxon?
Do I?
Yeah.
No, I'm retired. I design propellers for racing planes and electronic ignition for aircraft.
I had to ask. That's all right. Go ahead with point four.
In the alignment of the planets, I would expect that the mass center would be somewhat off-center from the sun, and that might cause some kind of tidal effect.
Okay, that's a lot of points. Peter, which ones do you want to take on here?
Well, let's think about the first one, though, and that's a really interesting point about the heating cycles. But it turns out that we have a really good record of heating and cooling, and they come from the ice cores. They've drilled cores in Lake Vostok and also in Greenland and Antarctica. And from that, they have a really good record of what CO2 was like. And also, they know directly.
Yeah, you said 50,000-year cycles.
Yeah, it's not. It turns out that we have 90,000 years of hot and 10,000 years of cold.
Mm.
And we've just come through the 10,000. Well, actually, I'm sorry, wrong. 90,000 years of cold and 10,000 warm. We've just had 10,000 warm since the last glaciation. So we should expect to dip now into a new glaciation that should last about 90,000 years.
Mm.
That's not going to happen. I mean, the CO2 we're pumping in now is going to make sure we don't go into a new glaciation. So in some respect, actually, we are saving ourselves from glaciation, but it's not a 50,000-year cycle, actually.
Is it, as he suggested, sinusoidal?
Sinusoidal is a regular curve, and this is very asymmetrical. It's a short warm, a long cold, a short warm, a long cold.
But is it predictable almost precisely, as in a sense?
Kind of. You know, there's some alterations, and it's really related back to the three aspects of the Earth: its tilt, its obliquity, its eccentricity as it goes around the sun. Milton Milankovitch, years ago, was the first to really figure out why there had been glaciations. It's all related to how much sunlight hits us and the distance from the sun.
Hmm. And volcanoes, they seem to have a lot to do with this process, don't they?
They do, but volcanoes, again, the heat flow from the Earth is pretty constant over sort of million-year intervals. So we can almost, at least in terms of looking at the ice ages, it's pretty constant. You know, if you take it over year by year and say, hey, this year we have volcanoes, next year we don't. But taking over longer time cycles, heat flow is about the same.
All right. Hold it right there. Peter Ward is my guest. Fascinating stuff. I'm sure you have questions. Judging from the way the phones are ringing, you obviously do. From the high desert, in the nighttime, where we do all our business, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. When you were not hiding out. Well, that was by request, and as much as I could get in there, I've been begged to do that. I always play little pieces. There, you've got it.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Those are the conduits to get to us. And us would be represented by Peter Ward. He's my guest. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Don't move. Scientist on board this morning. His name is Peter Ward, and it's been kind of grim in a lot of ways. A lot of this has been kind of grim, but I guess that's just the way it is. And we're continuing to take calls for Peter. Peter, again, I really do, when my guests don't come out and plug the heck out of their own books, I sort of have to make them. So do you want to plug Gorgon more, or your new one coming, or what?
Well, I always feel a little funny about this. I don't think I'm on the radio to plug books.
Well, yeah, but hey, it's a fair trade. It really is a fair trade. We get so much information from you, so much to think about, that it's a reasonably fair trade. So plug your book.
Well, have me back in November, and I'll give you a show that I think will just really thrill you folks about a really realistic view of what alien biochemistry might be. And the NASA work that is now actually constructing aliens on this planet. It sounds like a bad movie, but it's really true.
Oh, depend on it, then. All right, first time caller line, you're on the air with Peter Ward. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Art. Hi, Peter.
Hi. You're going to have to yell at us a little. You're not too loud.
Oh, okay. I just had a quick question about meteorites. You said they're like a 50-meter meteorite. If it was to hit a city, it would destroy the whole city. I was just wondering if it was possible for one to maybe blow up like a nuclear bomb and then have double the effect of just the meteorite hitting the city. And I'll hang up and let you answer that. Thanks.
Peter? Well,
you'd have to have some bomb already present in the city. And I hate to think that there are too many nukes in American cities, but I guess I wouldn't put it past our military. Most nuclear weapons, they are difficult to explode, and they have to have some actual electrical stuff happen to them, as far as I know. I don't think an air burst would actually probably do that, but who knows? So maybe.
Huh. Have you worked at all in the nuclear weapon arena, Peter? Or did you ever have that career path open to you?
No, the closest I've come again is I have been to a lot of conferences where we're trying to think about defense, planetary defense.
Right.
And the nuclear weapons people were there with us. So I was just one of the scientists trying to talk about the threat, and they were there trying to talk about the solution. But to me, the solution sounded a lot like the threat.
Yes. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Peter Ward. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jessica, and I'm calling from Western North Carolina.
Hi, Jessica.
I have a comment about the methane produced by landfills. Here in an adjoining county, there is a business incubator project in conjunction with a local technical college that teaches fine craft, and they've actually set up a building on top of an old landfill using the methane to fire kilns for ceramic work and also glass, fine art glass kilns. The artists are given a two-year period to use this facility to develop a following for the art that they're creating. And then they are expected to move on and establish their own studios, and then new artists will be allowed to use this facility. But instead of just burning off the methane into the atmosphere, they're actually tapping it. Hmm. And I can't see where this kind of philosophy can't be applied in other areas, not just, you know, for craft.
It's a very, very good question. What about methane as a power source itself, Peter?
Yeah, it's a great point. I think it just shows the ingenuity that we in this country can do. And so many of the problems that we face actually can be tackled on a local basis. And that's a great solution. I know of other people that are trying to do similar sorts of things to use this energy. There's actually so much great energy tied up in the garbage dumps of America, as well as recyclable minerals and metals. I mean, think of all the computers. Every 2 years, your computer is no longer usable, has gone obsolete. They all end up in a landfill somewhere. And now a lot of people are trying to recycle some of that stuff. So it's a great comment.
What about the stores of methane, though, that we were talking about earlier, the threatening stores of methane? Is there any extraction process?
Well, people are now worried. No, there isn't. And the problem
should there be? Could there be?
I don't know. I suppose the engineers could really take a good hard look at this, but the extraction process in the Arctic would probably not be a good one because the stuff is so diffuse. It's not present in any particular small area in high enough concentration.
Got
it. The entire gigantic area in which it's stored that makes it of a very large volume. In terms of the Black Sea, I don't know, but that's the scariest one because the Black Sea, we know, is the only ocean that has so much organic material at the bottom, more than any of the other oceans, because there's no oxygen down there. So every bit of organic material that goes down isn't oxidized. It stays in the reduced form, and it's the reduced compounds that have all the energy in them.
So if we see an event in the Black Sea, that would be like the canary in the mine plopping over on its side?
Yeah, well, at least there's some recognition that there's a problem about this. Even 5 years ago, this wasn't on the radar screen. And now in the scientific journals, you see an awful lot of articles about methane. There's this tremendous realization that, you know, we've overlooked this, and perhaps someone should take a good, hard look. Well, any number of someones are now doing that.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Ward and Art Bell. Good morning.
Hi, Art. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is Mike from Nashville. You know, when we was going to the moon, it was a competitive thing. It was a race to the moon. And on our energy, I'm thinking more in terms of the automobile industry and the trucking industry and all that certainly put a lot of stuff into the atmosphere. And it has a great deal to do on our economy. And it looks to me like we're going to have to look for other things other than fossil fuels, but there's nobody else. There's not no race in this arena. and there's no reward for it, whether it be politically or whatever. And until somebody else, maybe China, we're selling them a lot of Buicks now. I saw that on 60 Minutes the other night. If they start doing that, Willie Nelson has been heading up a thing with burning soybean oil. And, you know, we can grow that, and that helps the farmer, and that helps the economy, and it also helps, you know, get away from fossil fuel.
I'm certainly very well aware of that, caller. As you know, I interviewed Willie Nelson the other night. Peter, it's true. Willie's talking about biodiesel, a couple of different forms, really, of biodiesel, but stuff that farmers can grow. How do you feel about that as I don't know, a move in the right direction?
Well, it's a tremendous move. And again, I saw an article where they're talking about biodiesel combined with hybrid technology. And they're talking about at least 100 mile per gallon and maybe 150. And you're not using anybody's oil but our own. I think it's just so fantastic. I do not understand why there are not gigantic tax credits now being waved around.
I don't know why we're not using it. I mean, it's my understanding, unless Willie was wrong, and I don't think he was.
I don't think he's wrong at all.
You can take this stuff and just put it into the existing trucks, the diesel trucks that are roaring across at a giant rate, not only here, but in China as well, with no conversion whatsoever. Just take this bioproduct, put it in the tank, and go. That's it. There's no magic beyond that. It'd be a boon for the farmers and a boon for us. I don't see why we don't do it.
Well, the reason we may not be, and again, I don't know, but I'm curious as to what the emissions of that stuff will be. Again, we're regulated to the point now that we have to have highly refined gasolines, and this stuff just may not be refined to the point. You may actually have more emissions coming out of this.
I don't think that's true.
I don't know one way or the other.
I can't say it for an actual fact, but I had a number of people send me graphs showing the emissions to be much less troublesome.
Well, there you go, then.
And so even if it's an even bet on the emission side, or it's a little bit better bet, considering the source and what we'd be offsetting, it seems worth doing no matter what. So there you are.
There you go.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Ward. Good morning.
Morning, Art and Peter.
Hi.
This is Patrick from Fort Collins, Colorado.
All right, Patrick. Are you on a phone or a speaker phone?
A phone.
A phone. You're going to have to yell at us because you're not very loud.
Okay. My question is, what if what are the odds of a meteor coming down and coming to the Earth's atmosphere and becoming a new moon?
Ah, becoming a new moon.
Yeah.
That's a cool idea. It would have to be a pretty good meteor to be going to orbit. I think it's probably a very small chance, and here's why. Most of the orbits that the meteors have that are Earth-crossing, they already have such high speed that they're going to go by so quickly we can't capture them. They just either hit us or they go by us. And some have even gone through the atmosphere. Strangely enough, though, if you're a big planet like Uranus or Jupiter, you can capture moons, and Saturn may have captured many of its small moons. So it's a really good question. It's just our Earth is probably too small to do that.
Well, out of curiosity, then, how did we get our moon in the first place?
We got hit. We got hit really hard by a Mars-sized planet. And our moon is sort of the wreckage thrown out from that. It just went up into space, but it was moving away from us at a slow enough speed that the Earth's gravity captured it.
Great. When might that have happened?
That happened about 4.6 billion years ago.
Bang.
And some of the really interesting reasons we think the Earth is so rare may be related right back to that.
To the moon, right?
Yeah, not many places have a moon like ours.
And actually, it's required for life in some ways, right?
Oh, yeah, it does an awful lot. Well, it certainly gives us the tides. Tides are really highly involved. But there may be even more subtle and more interesting things. If the moon were not there, the Earth would be flopping around on its axis. We would not be in this 23.5 degrees. We would be changing all over. So the tropics becomes the Arctic, and the Arctic becomes the tropics. Mars does that, and the Earth would, too, without the moon.
So when everything was new, there were a lot of rogue things whisking about to hit us, but now we're a little bit older, and most of them have either hit or or not. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yes. And the reason we're not being hit is because of Jupiter. And one of the reasons that I think the Earth is so rare is that if you do not have a Jupiter-sized planet at the distance of our Jupiter, you're hit a whole lot more. So any planet that does not have a Jupiter in its system that is the right distance gets blasted and blasted and blasted over and over and over.
People may remember how many objects hit Jupiter just not very long ago. It was, 13 or something?
Yeah, it was
17, Shoemaker, maybe. I forget a whole bunch of them. Shoemaker-Levy.
That was the comet that came in. And just, you know, one of the reasons that SETI doesn't like me very much is that when you start looking at the odds for Earth-like life or planets like Earth that have a long stability, you start seeing an awful lot of things about our planet that are pretty special. Not unique, just special.
Right. Have you had debates with SETI people?
Oh, over and over and over. I mean, I debated Frank Drake on national radio. I've debated Seth Shostak about 6 times in front of the public. Jill Tarter really doesn't like me.
Oh, really?
No, I've had a lot of debates with him.
Do you think Jill would debate you again?
She might. I mean, there was a really funny moment. I was with Paul Allen when she was trying to talk Paul out of the $12 million, and I handed him a copy of my book, Rare Earth, which had just come out, and it was kind of like the scene in The Exorcist. It was like, it burns! It burns! Get away from him! He's the devil!
Yes, well, I can see how they would think of you that way. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Ward. Good morning. Hello there. East of the Rockies, going once, going twice. Are you there?
Is this west or east?
East, that's you.
Oh, okay. I had a question for Peter.
Yes.
It's portrayed in the movie, Day After Tomorrow.
Yes.
With the things that's happening now, do you believe that we would hit anything like that storm that would throw us into that?
All right, it's a fair question. Could such a storm, as depicted in The Day After Tomorrow, conceivably occur?
No, physically impossible. And that's the worst thing about the movie, is to make it dramatic, they sort of sped up everything so quickly. There's no known way that you could have a storm that could be so cold so quickly that it would freeze everybody to that extent. They walked out and they were frozen.
Right. Well, in a 2-hour movie, there's no conceivable way to do it.
Nope, there isn't.
Otherwise.
No, so the storm was an impossibility.
There you have it. First time caller line, you're on the air with Peter Ward. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, good morning. I have a 2-part question. Art,
okay.
I love your show.
Thank you.
From Connecticut.
Oh.
And the first question is that, is it possible from yesterday's show that I could get a copy or something like that?
That doesn't relate to today.
No, I know.
Yes, you can always contact the network. You can go on and Streamlink and listen, or you can get a copy. Yes, the answer is yes.
So it's called Streamlink?
Yes.
Okay, and the second question is for Peter Ward. If, based upon yesterday talking to John Lash, after he spoke, what is he? Is he have any comment or aware of what John Lash talked about in terms of the Archons versus what he might discover?
Oh, this isn't a good question for Peter Ward.
I didn't listen to the show.
Yeah, there you are.
I don't quite know what you're referring to.
It was about Gnostic knowledge, ancient knowledge, and totally unfair to foist that
me,
off on
sorry.
Me. Yeah, I understand. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Ward. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is Jason in Portland, listening on 1190 KEX.
That's the way to promo. Yes, sir.
Right. I was just wondering, I heard the reason that we have the moon and is to sustain life, and the reason Jupiter is there is to keep out the rocks from hitting us.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it wasn't just all by accident, but maybe that it was constructed to be that way.
Uh-huh.
And a part about the changing of the center of mass from the sun and the planets.
Well, let's not rush by the constructed that way. Peter, you want to comment on that? In other words,
designed
that way, created that way.
Yeah,
so unique.
I'm not a fan of intelligent design. In science, we have something called parsimony, which tries to get the simplest possible explanation.
Like Occam's razor, right?
It's a lot. It's a lot simpler to invoke physical laws than you have to invoke something as absolutely as complicated as the creator. Making a creator is really hard. Making gravity is a lot easier. So,
you're saying it's rare, rare earth, but it's not so rare that it causes you to embrace the possibility of intelligent design.
Right, no, and not, Art, not I have close. A question. I'm sorry, Art, you on that point, you brought up something a couple weeks ago, like relating to the movie Contact.
Yes.
Like how you study ants. Like how do you think that is any different that we would be able to communicate with alien beings in the same way that...
In the way we relate to ants. All right, we're so short on time, sir, I hate to do it, but I've got to leave you there. Do you think of it ever that way, Peter? That we would be to aliens as ants are to us?
No, I think that we're not really that stupid. I can't imagine there would be aliens so much smarter than we. I mean, we got to this technology, this pretty damn good technology. Maybe there are. Maybe the universe is vast and there's hugely, vastly greater intelligences, but I doubt it.
All right. Well, it has been a pleasure, as always, having you on. You promise a good show coming up in...
Well, I've got this book coming out in November. My book company is just dying and going to heaven to think I could do a show after it came out.
Well, then let them go. at least to somebody's design. Peter, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Art. See you again next time.
Good night, my friend. And to all of you, I return you to the weeknights, and we'll see you again next weekend. Here are the right words from Crystal.
In the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride. Filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it till tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you?